So we're going to move on to different type of collaborative systems. And so we're going to talk about shared editors. Well, the concept is pretty simple. We're all used to editing documents and things with things like text editors and graphical editors and all sorts of tools to create content. So, shared editing is about the collaborative creation and editing of such documents. And what we want to do is to make it so that all the users are effectively editing the same document, even though in practice what the system will do is that it will manage various copies of the document on each user's computer and use clever algorithms to make them look like they are the same document. So there are two things that makes this different from, say, accessing a shared database or sharing a file system when you have several users connected on the same server. The first one is, again, this notion of awareness. Here we tend to call it group awareness. And it's this idea of, as I am editing a document, I need to know what the others are doing. And what the others are doing is not, knowing what the others are doing is not just seeing the effect of what they are doing. Have you all used Google Docs? Okay, that will help. So, you know, when you use Google Docs, what the other users are typing or editing shows up immediately. Now, what feature is there in Google Docs that is more for group awareness? Very simple, nothing. It's probably so simple you don't even think of it. Does Google Docs tell you anything about the other users?
Well, they all have the different colors, and so you can see which parts of the document one user is editing by putting, for example, on, if you have different slides for a presentation, so put the color of the user editing the slide on the slide thumbnail.
Yes. So you see the list of users on that document.
Yes.
Top right. They each have a color. And then, so when I said Google Docs, I was more thinking of text editing. So in the text editor, it shows you the cursor position with a little tag showing which user that is. Google Present, I think you were referring to. So the slide where the other user is has that color. This is group awareness. I mean, you wouldn't need to have this for the system to work. It's just telling you, giving you information about what the others are doing. The other important notion in shared editors is that of a collaborative task. The idea, unlike a shared database, unlike a shared file system, where a bunch of users are working on the same resources, but not on the necessarily, at least, or explicitly on the collaborative task, here, in general, if I create, again, I take the example of Google Doc and I share the link with some of you, it's because I know we're going to work together to create this document. So the fact that users are working towards the same goal means that there is some implicit and explicit coordination going on between their actions. So if you remember my classification of the three categories, communication, coordination, and sharing. If you're going to work together on the document, you are going to coordinate your actions. By that, I mean that if you are in a text document, and I see that you are editing that part of the document, I'm probably going to stay away from it, so we don't step on each other's toes.
And we will prefer another user to edit what you are editing, actually. So.
Yes. So.
So when you are editing a part of text, then other people can edit that part too.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was working.
It's only a short of you know, maybe two or three of sentences they are working, but it's blocked, so no other people can touch it.
Okay. I'm not a big user of Google Docs for other reasons that we'll talk a little bit about. So that's interesting. But there are editors where they let you, you know, edit the same part of the text. And what we observe is people sort of spontaneously stay away of each other or make sure that they do different tasks that don't interact with each other. So this is what I would call implicit coordination that is supported by the awareness. If I didn't know where you are in the document, I certainly couldn't do this kind of implicit coordination. There's also explicit coordination going on, where people will, either through a communication channel, and many of these tools have a chat system that runs on the side, where people can exchange messages, or a lot of people, when they are working closely, will have actually a Skype communication on the side, or Google Hangout or whatever, so they can talk to each other. In some tools, it supports an audio channel, in games. Games is a type of shared editing, if you want to think of it this way. So, through this communication channels, people do explicit coordination, saying, oh, I'm going to work on the intro for now, and so why don't you do that other thing? They will also sometimes use the document itself for coordination. I mean, I've seen in shared editing, people write, when you do, for example, shared editing of code, you put a comment saying, I'm working on this, in the text itself. Because if you put it on a separate channel, it's hard to say, you know, I'm working on this part and reference the part. If you put it in the document itself, you can put comments here. Or you put comments such as, oh, you know, this other person should work on this. So what you see is this interleaving of various activities using maybe the same substrate, the same document. But this is all coordination action. So awareness and collaborative aspect is what makes shared editors different from other systems where you happen to edit or modify the same data, but you're not explicitly doing require. So there are many types of shared editors. The first, they tend to be specialized by type of document they're in. So there's been a lot of work on text editing. Less so on graphics. There have been a number of shared whiteboards where what you're sharing is, you know, a sort of drawing surface and you can write on it. But there are fewer tools that support vector drawing, that is, shared vector drawing. There are shared spreadsheets. With Google Docs, we talked about shared presentation editing, etc. You have systems that are called synchronous or real-time, and some that are called asynchronous or different time. We will focus mostly on synchronous ones because this is where the action is. This is what's more interesting. In synchronous systems, the changes that you make are immediately visible to everybody else. Right? Now, there are systems that are asynchronous where I make changes and I have to commit them to say, okay, show the others. Now, the sort of extreme case of this is the revision control systems, you know, like RCS, CVS, SVN, Git, all these things, where they work on an asynchronous mode. I get a copy of the document, I make my changes, and then I say, okay, I commit them so that others can see those changes. Of course, with an asynchronous system, you have the possibility that two users are going to make changes to the same part of the document, or changes that are just incompatible with each other. So when you commit the changes to the repository, in the case of version systems, it may come back saying, well, I can't do it. There's a conflict. Someone else changed it in a way that is inconsistent. Now, this can also happen, in fact, in synchronous systems, because we'll talk a little bit about the architectures of these systems, but in general, each user is working on a local copy, and the changes are sent to the other, and they try to work so the result is the same for everyone. But as we will see, we get into the same potential for conflicts as we have in asynchronous. And so personally, I find this distinction kind of not really the right one. I think the real distinction is everybody working on the same version of the document, or are we supporting multiple versions, and or not? And this is, in a sense, independent of the fact that changes are distributed immediately or not. And you know, where you're on a network, when you are on the network, things are always have a time difference. So what for us seems synchronous for the system is very asynchronous, because it can take a second for a change to propagate. Another distinction between those systems is that most of them are what I call homogeneous. They require that everybody is using the same software. So Google Docs is an example, and that's why I hate it, because it's a poor text editor, you have to agree. I spent years learning to fight Word, and I'm pretty good at that. And when people say, oh, you know, this is in Google Docs, and oh, I'm going to have to fight with Google Docs now, because I'm not familiar with the interface. So what I would like is you know, a text, I mean, especially if you think text editing, maybe not formatted text, because that can get complex, but when you're editing source code, you know, it's just plain lines, there's no formatting, no nothing. So why is it forcing me that everybody has to use the same editor for editing such a standard structure? And a heterogeneous group where users can use different software, and frankly, I don't know any system that supports that today, except for the asynchronous systems that use version control. So, yeah, if I'm using an SVN or a Git repository, you know, I can use whatever editor I want. I still have to have an editor that knows how to do a commit with SVN or with Git or whatever, but that's not very hard. I insist on this because I think this is a major reason why these systems are not being adopted widely. You know, people don't want to shift system because there is a new functionality. It should be part of existing editors, not something that forces you to use a different editor. Now, there's also another way to distinguish the systems. Some are called collaboration aware, others are called collaboration transparent. And collaboration aware systems, the system was designed to include group awareness features. In collaboration transparent systems, the sharing occurs, but the system does not support group awareness explicitly. Which means that in general, despite the name, collaboration, well, transparent usually is a positive name. In this case, it's not. Collaboration transparent, in fact, is putting a positive spin on something that is not, because the awareness features should be built into the system. Imagine a Google Docs where you didn't have the cursors in the text, but you have something on the side that tells you X is editing line 27, or things like this. Now, the reason we have collaboration transparent software is that, as we'll talk about in a moment, some shared editors have been built by taking a sort of single user editor, and then adding features to it without modifying the single user editor. And so when you do that, you end up with something that is called collaboration transparent, but is not generally a good thing. So you may remember in the intro class I talked about the CoLab. This was really the early work on shared editors, although the Grove editor I think predates that a little bit. But they did a lot of work on building shared editors and some underlying concepts. In particular, they introduced in this paper cited there the notion of congruence. So congruence is the fact that things are going towards the same state. And they were aware that the good architecture for building groupware and shared editors was what we will call in a moment the replicated architecture, where each one has their own copy of the document and the system tries to sort of synchronize them in the back. However, when several people edit the same document, what do we want exactly to happen at each person's level? Do we want them to all see the exact same part of the document? That is called view congruence. So in view congruence, we essentially share the scroll bar. So we all see the same part of the document. At first it seems like, why would you do that? It seems like. Well, in fact, there are interesting situations when you are reviewing a document. So one person is saying, well, let's go through the document and see what needs to be done. Well, you want to have everybody be in sync, and so see the same view. But just from this example I cited, what it also shows is that at some point in time, I will want view congruence, and then the next minute I don't want it. You know, I use it to say, well, let's go through the document and see what needs to be done, and then, okay, now let's get to work, and each person wants their own view. So, in many systems, these things are built in, they're a feature. But what you want, in fact, is for each of these to be able to relax it, relax the congruence, say, well, no, we don't want to be seeing the same view, or to activate it, say, well, now I want to see the same view. You have the same thing with what they call display space congruence, which is the size of the window, the position of the window on the screen. There are systems where if I move a window, if I resize it, everybody has the same. And that can be useful, again, when we do a review and I need to say, well, you know, here's two documents and I can say about which one is on the right and on the left, and I know that it's going to be the same for everyone. Now we have, the next one is the time of display congruence, which is a more subtle notion than this synchronous and asynchronous thing I was talking about, which is when do I want the changes to be seen by other users? Now in synchronous versus asynchronous, I was saying, well, synchronous is as I type things show up, character by character or line by line. And in asynchronous, I make as many changes as I want and then I say, well, commit. Well, there's a range in between. I could make it so changes are sent only when maybe I hit return or finish a sentence and it takes editing. So the system decides when I've done a chunk of changes or when I move the cursor to a different paragraph. I may have it that so that the changes are sent every 10 seconds, maybe because of bandwidth constraints or things like this. It's often the case that people like to make small changes, you know, write a sentence, edit it, make small changes, but only commit when the sentence is done. And so with this notion of time of display congruence, you have this range of possibilities between really immediate real time to when the user decides. It can be in between where the system decides when to. And then there is a subgroup congruence, which is when are the different users, which subgroup of users can see the changes. And again, there are many situations where you want some, well, documents themselves may be more or less public and available to more or less people. But sometimes you want, for example, a tool that allows you to annotate things. Some users are allowed to see the annotations and not others. Now, this tends to not be as important as the other features because these tools are usually used for in situations where strong tight collaboration, and when this happens, it tends to be in a situation where the users are peers at the same level in the organization. This notion of subgroup is when you have documents that are managed by groups that involve multiple levels of management, for example, and some users have more rights than others. So this is the image I think I showed in the intro course that introduces the notion of WYSIWYS versus WYSIWYS. So what you see is what I see. This is strict view congruence. We see the same part of the document. It can be relaxed. So what you see is almost what I see, which is that we both have access to the same document, but we can view different parts of the document. And of course, when I'm in this situation, I want to have awareness features so that if this person is scrolling into there, maybe his display will show that Blue is also seeing this part of the document. So when you have strict congruence, you don't need so much group awareness because you get it from the fact that if someone scrolls, it scrolls for everyone. So you get this information immediately. If I relax this constraint on the strict view congruence, then I probably want to know or be able to know where the others are. The same works for the other spots. So here are a few historical examples. With asynchronous text editors, Quilt, Prep, I'll show you an image from Prep. Synchronous text editors, there's been a lot of them, we'll see the three examples, and one synchronous graphical editor, which is a system designed by one of my former students. So Grove, I think, was one of the early text editors. Grove means group outline viewing editor. And the word outline is important because what people realized is when there is strong collaboration between people to edit a text document, often it's done in meetings and it's done to create an outline like a list of action items or something of that nature. And so they focused on that. So it was real time in the sense that it was concurrent editing at the character level. It was supporting private, shared, and public views, which is in fact making it a little bit asynchronous because I could open a private view and my changes would be visible only to me. The paper describes a feature that I don't think was implemented in fact, but the notion of clouds. So this is a group awareness feature that shows the activity of other users. So the idea is that in the text you figure out where the other user is, and instead of showing their cursor like they do in Google Docs, it was showing a cloud around the area. And that's a better way to convey that, you know, someone is working around there. The problem with group awareness is that it can be too intrusive. You know, if I give you too much information, it's overwhelming. So the idea is that the clouds will be more stable than the cursor jumping all the time. They also had this feature which I kind of like. I haven't used it, but it seems a good idea. And again, it's another way of showing group awareness, is that when you type in text, as you type it, it's blue, and then it progressively gets older by turning into black. And this way you could browse the document and see where there is blue, even if the cloud is gone because the user has moved somewhere else. Now, that means that, you know, the way to convey feedback to the user can be by adding things to the document, like these other cursors, like these clouds, but it can be in the document itself. I don't know if you've used the track changes mode on Word. Yes, track changes. So when you actually track changes, when you erase, when you delete text, it doesn't disappear. It has a strike through and it turns red. When you type text, it is blue, etc. So the document, in a sense, keeps track of the changes and shows the changes to you. So you could imagine something like this, where the content itself shows you historical information that may be difficult to display otherwise. So the other feature thing about Grove is that this was created by Skip Hellis and his colleagues. These are people who came from the database world. And they introduced the notion of, to create Grove and to make it work and to do concurrent editing at the character level. And I don't know if it was the first system to do that, but it was certainly one of the first. They had to come up with an algorithm for doing this, and they introduced the operational transformations, which I'll talk a lot more about, which is a technology that came from databases. And I think the issue with shared databases was really that users should be able to do whatever they want without knowing that there are other users. And this issue of being aware of what the other users are is not natural to people working in databases. And so I think this explains some of the limitations of the technology they developed. But
I need to elaborate on this.
So a quick slide on PREP, asynchronous text editor. The notion here of asynchronous is not so much that people are making changes, you know, individually and then committing them. It was more about how do you display to the user the changes between successive versions. And so I don't like personally the term synchronous versus asynchronous, because nothing is ever synchronous. So here asynchronous is more about version system. And so what PREP would give you is the text of the document, some ways to show parts that have been edited, so changed, inserted, or removed, and also an annotation system, so the people could make annotations as they either were editing the document or were reviewing the document. And so here, the goal was to support a workflow where a document gets revised and where shared editing at a character level is not really the problem. So in a sense, it's at the limit between text editing and workflow systems. But it's still categorized as a shared editor in the literature. So this was SASE, the system that was done at the University of Toronto. And they introduced the notion of group awareness widgets. So here we see that there is a shift from building specific tools for shared editing to making it easier for people to develop shared editors by providing them with a toolkit that has a number of features that are needed for groupware. So what we see here is that in SASE you had your own scroll bar, but next to it was another scroll bar that would show the positions of the other users. And so these would move by themselves. Now, interestingly, that makes it easy to see what another user is doing, because you just scroll this scroll bar to align it with that of the other user. I even believe, but I would have to get back to the paper, that there was a way to couple So to go into strict WYSIWYS with another user by copying your scroll bar with that of the other user, in which case you always move together. They also introduced this split display, and the bottom part will be turned into what they call the radar view, so where you see an overview of the whole document to show where the other users are. Now we'll see when we get to toolkits for groupware that this is the kind of things that has later been built into groupware toolkits, so that they were widgets like you have regular scroll bars and in existing toolkits. And now this is a system that we built with my former student Alain Carcenti. And here we were interested in looking at graphical editors. Everybody was working on text editing, and so it seemed like, okay, how are things different if you have other types of documents? Now, a lot of people had done shared whiteboards, but that's easy because on the whiteboards you're sharing pixels. So I draw, you draw, I draw, it's just, you know, accumulating changes on the pixels. With a structured editor like this one, you know, if I move this object, it's going to move with the things that are attached to it. And so if someone else wants to move it at the same time, there will be a conflict. You'll probably realize that this is again the thing with the squares and the circles and arrows. So yes, it was meant for shared editing of PetriNets. Although it was never developed into a system that was used in that way, but that was our sort of case study. So what did we do in group design? Well, one thing is that the, because it's a 2D surface, the scroll bar thing doesn't work. So what we were using, and this is an image that we constructed after the fact because the hard copy was really poor, but we were drawing this overlay of what part is seen by another user. So Alain is blue, that's what he sees, and here I outline the part that is viewed by his window. But that was not the most interesting piece of this. The more interesting piece of this, yes, was, by the way, I didn't give you the slides. You guys are really asleep. I have 10 of them, so the cap, C, C, no. Sorry about that. Especially since I got up earlier even to print them for you. So. So, as with many other editors, the participants had colors assigned to them. This, by the way, is probably a bad idea, because if you have more than two or three people, you don't remember the colors. But we haven't found anything better, because you can also put the user's name, but that overloads the display. Now, Google Docs does both. But it's something where we haven't really found a general solution. Now, in a text editor, what you do is three things. You move the cursor, you insert characters, and you delete characters. I mean, that's the basic operations. And all of these are instantaneous. I type a character, it shows up. I type the next character. In a graphical editor, many commands take time. I create a new object, I have to click, drag, release. I move an object, I have to click, drag, release. And so, what we realized is that if we were doing pure real-time shared editor, when I create a rectangle or when I resize a rectangle here, the other users would see a rectangle move by itself until I make up my mind and I'm done with it. And of course, those moves are important to me because I'm adjusting the size. But the other users are not controlling that. And so, in order to reduce the distraction of having things move by themselves all the time, what we did is, when you started a long interaction like here resizing, on the remote side, we would display a small icon in the object being resized or being moved. Now, this small icon tells the other user, well, this thing is being manipulated, so don't touch it. It says more than that. It says this thing is being resized. And in fact, the system would allow you to make something that is compatible with the resize. So I could change the color, for example, or type text in it or something. But I couldn't resize or move it, because those would conflict. And by showing the icon, it means that I reduce the chances that those conflicts will occur. Now, when I'm done, what I see is the final rectangle, so it's fine. Now, on the remote side, we could remove the icon, show the new size, and be done with it. But what we notice is that if you do that, people don't see what has changed. It's worse than that. They see that something has changed, but they can't tell what. So, if we do, you know, strict WYSIWYS in a sense, I show all my movements, it's distracting. If I only show the final state, it's frustrating because I see something change, I don't know what. So we solve that by doing an animation. We know that it takes about a second for the brain to perceive an animation. Under 1 second is too short, beyond 1 second it starts to be too long. So what we do is at the end we animate either the change of size or the change of position, and things like this. And this way people can have time to notice and understand the change.
You try the continuous feedback?
Yes. It's annoying. Well, it's annoying. Again, I think it's like all these levels of awareness and levels of coupling and level of congruence. It depends what you're doing. If you have a strongly coupled task where we are all concentrating on the same part and solving it together, you probably want the same feedback for everyone. But if we are each working on subparts and you want peripheral awareness of what the others are doing, so you don't want it to be too distracting, but you also want to keep an eye on it. So in the proper system, I would have these various modes or sliders to say, well, what kind of feedback do you want? And there may be a mode where, you know, I don't even want to see the icons or the animation, you know, and maybe there are individual preferences as well. But the thing I know is that if you do strict feedback, it's going to be annoying in many cases.
For removing an object, and what type of remote, in the remote side, they will just see the object disappear, or they...
Yeah, so we would size it to zero. Maybe today we'll do a poof, right in the back. Mm-hmm. So...
I like the idea of the icon animation, but what happens if a remote change happens while I'm in a different scope of the canvas? It's not in my view, but suddenly I scroll, I go down to where the change was done, and I feel surprised, and I think what you said happen, that I see a change, but I don't
really realize
what happened.
So the thing is, I like the idea from Grove where things where there have been changed, recent changes would be highlighted. I think you need to go beyond that. You also need to be to have a way to replay recent changes to an object. And that gets to a feature that, to my knowledge, is not covered in any of these tools. At least those that do the more real-time type of interaction, is reviewing the history. And there's been a lot of papers on how to do undo in a collaborative editing. Because you want to undo, I think you want to undo your own action, but you know, it's a tricky thing to do right. Some people say, well, I should be able to undo other people's actions. So there have been quite a lot of work on undo redo, but not on replay, just replay to understand what's happening. Yeah,
you can do this, but it's not shared in editors, so you can see. you have this history features where you can see what you did.
Yes.
Different times. Especially with Max, you have this time machine feature. You can take the full version of your text editing, but it does not apply to book work, so
well, it could. The thing with Time Machine is that it gives you snapshots.
Yeah.
What you want is, I mean, snapshots are not always appropriate because you're interested more often in what happened rather than individual states.
Yeah.
We did a project in a group, the paper is called Glimpse. I think it has two or three eyes.
I see two.
And
oh, a pen that works.
And that's a work where they were looking at when you have two versions of the text, how can you show the changes as an animation? And it's a very nice. It's easy to look it up because of the two eyes. I agree. The funny thing is that all the systems need to keep a history of what happened to work, as we will see in a moment when we look at the algorithms for synchronization. So they have the historical information. And so it would be hard to give the user access to it. Now, there now are some commercial systems that are fairly widely deployed for shared editing. So I don't know if you know Samitha Edit. I don't know where they came up with this name. But this is one of the rare non-web-based, non-cloud-based systems that does real-time shared editing. And it's really designed for coding. So it has a number of nice features for real-time editing. You see the list of people who are in this document on the right. You can do chat with them on the side. And in the document itself, there are colors and various features to support editing. We also see stuff in the scroll bar here, showing you where the others are and things like that. Then, of course, there is Google Docs that we talked about briefly. And now even the Microsoft, that's a new one. So even the Office now has shared editing, although what they do, it's not Microsoft Office. It's the web-based version of it. So I still cannot open Microsoft Word and start sharing what I'm doing with someone else. I have to go into the online version, which of course has a different, pretends it has the same interface, but not really. So I think all these modern systems are all homogeneous, so they all force you to be in the same tool. They're mostly cloud-based. I mean, there are a bunch of others that I've been talking about, but if you look for shared editors, 99% of what you'll find is cloud-based. I don't like cloud-based stuff. I mean, I don't know why I would let Google see what I'm doing. I don't know who owns my document, what they do with it, or where they are. And on top of that, if I don't have network access, I usually can't use it. Now, I know that in Google Drive they started to do offline stuff, but so I'm not sure this is a good approach, really. People want to own their documents, and I know that we can solve it technically. So the idea that it has to be in the cloud to be shared is a fallacy. It is just not true. It's something they want you to think because it helps their business to have, you know, it's really like many businesses, like banks or insurance, they want to lower the cost of entry and to make the cost of exit very high. So once you are in the system, it has to be very high to switch, but they want to make it easy for you to get in. Why is Microsoft doing a system that looks so much like Office? Is to people who say, it's the same, I'm going to go on their cloud thing. And then all my documents are trapped in there, and I can get out.
But what about the network? You need a network for Collaborate.
Yes, well, but the thing is, I want to have access to my documents, even if I'm not connected. And then either the system says, well, you know, be careful, or it does a versioning thing, or it does a thing. We know how to solve asynchronous things with merging and all these things. But I want the documents on my hard drive. I have a bunch, you know, for this Kai conference, we have a bunch of things on Google Docs. Well, while I'm on the plane, I'm stuck. I can't do anything. And the last point is they do not support these different levels of coupling that I was talking about. I don't think in Google Docs you can synchronize views. And even though they are starting to do it, I've tried it recently, they don't go to the asynchronous bit where it works when I'm completely disconnected, or if I want to work on the document for by myself and then decide if I want to commit changes or not. So I'm in a situation where not only I'm forced to use a different tool for sharing, but it forces me to share in a certain way. And if I want to share it another way, I would have to use yet another tool. I think those features should be supported in the system, like we're used to having undo, and you're used to having copy and paste, and all these features in editors. Sharing and supporting different levels of coupling should be part of any editor nowadays. So what I would like to spend a little bit of time on is how these things actually work. Unless you have questions on the part. Okay, so as I said, we have collaboration transparent versus collaboration aware systems. Collaboration transparent systems are systems that are built so that you take any single user application and you turn it into groupware. Now, this is a very strong selling argument. Does it deliver? Yeah. So, you have a number of systems like VNC. Yeah. So, VNC is a way to take any single user application, entire screen for that matter, and share it, and you can share it with, in fact, multiple users, and everyone can interact. Well, not quite really, because of course the application was never designed to have multiple cursors, so what you end up usually is with the turn-taking algorithm, whether it's explicit or implicit, only one user can really interact at once. It of course forces things like view congruence. Because of course, there's only one application, single user application to start with, so everybody has to see the same thing. Now, I'm not saying this is useless. We cannot rewrite every single application into groupware, so it's a good fallback. But it's not what we want to go towards. It's more a solution for legacy applications. So, collaboration aware systems are designed from the start for sharing and collaborative work. And typically, what they do is they manage the consistency between distributed copies of the document you're editing. What you want is a system that is robust in the sense that you don't want, if you're collaborating with someone at the other end of the globe, you don't want that a network problem on their side or their computer crashing is going to prevent you from doing anything, or makes you even lose the document. So that's an important feature. And we have systems like Google Docs, like
that actually work this way, with a caveat that the document is in fact hosted in the cloud.
So there's a lot of vocabulary, if you start reading the literature about this, that may throw you off. We tend to talk not of users, but of participants. Okay, so easy enough. A session is the concept that one or more users, so typically a group of users, are editing a document. So we're talking of the session as the one, usually once, sometimes more documents being edited by a group of users. Once you have a session, you can invite people into the session. There is the notion of floor control, who can do something at some point in time. So flow control in general is the policy for managing input from multiple users. And essentially there's turn taking, which is one person, you know, takes the floor, as they say, and nobody else can do anything, and then this person can leave the floor and it can go into turn taking. Now of course a better system is what's called open floor, where everybody can act all the time. You can imagine things in between with the notion of roles, where some people can do some things, some people have more powers than others, and things like this. The word telepointer is often used to describe the fact that the cursor of one user is visible on the other user's screen. So that can be the mouse cursor itself, although for the mouse cursor to be useful to distant users, you need to have a view congruence. Everybody sees the same thing. Otherwise, when you imagine the same text document, if I have a wide screen and you have a smaller one, the text is going to be laid out differently, so the position of my cursor is hard to map. And in this case, I will map not the mouse cursor position, but the text cursor position. But telepointer is a generic term used for that. So this is more terms that are used from the perspective of users of the system. These are more terms that are used from the perspective of the designers of the system. So we talk about levels of coupling, which means how local actions are tied to remote actions. When I do something locally, if there's strong coupling, it means it's going to be executed immediately everywhere else. If there is loose coupling, it happens with a delay. Maybe a few seconds, maybe the user has to explicitly send the events or something like this. With respect to coupling, we have two important notions, the response time and the notification time. Now, it's important to realize that you don't expect the same behavior from your own actions than from the actions of others. When I type a character, I want to see it show up immediately. So if it has to go on a round trip to a server somewhere, you know, on another continent, I'm not going to have a good response time, and the thing will feel slow and sluggish, and I'm not going to want to use it. The notification time, when you type a character, if it takes a second or 2 seconds to come to me, it's not the end of the world. So, in a sense, to do things right, we would of course want these to be as close to zero as possible, but we are willing to make more, to relax the notification time more than the response time. The word replication is also used a lot. Replication means that you replicate either a program or a document or a state or a data structure across multiple sites, and you have then a consistency maintenance algorithm that is in charge of making the replicas, the copies, as close to each other as possible. With respect to that, there is a notion of a quiescent system, which is a system where all the messages that have been sent have been received and handled by all the sites. So the system is quiet, nothing is happening. And so while you accept that the system is in an inconsistent state while things are in transit, so you know, you've typed the character A, it shows up on your screen, but it hasn't reached my screen yet, so I don't see your A. So our copies are inconsistent. At some point, your message is going to arrive, be handled, and I'll see the A. And so if you wait until all the messages are handled, we want all the copies to converge to the same state in that situation. And then there's your robustness that I talked about, which is mostly robustness to remote faults.
Because I don't want my work to be affected by your computer crashing.
Now, to implement groupware, there are similarities with operating systems and databases. There are the fact that we have to deal with several users, that the system is distributed geographically, that we need to manage concurrent access to a shared data structure, that oftentimes the way to do this is through replication. A lot of shared database are in fact distributed and replicated. And the fact we have to deal with faults and things crashing. However, in operating systems and databases, every effort is made so that users don't know about each other. There's also the assumption that what users are doing is completely independent from each other. There's no notion of collaborative task. So we don't try to make groupware transparent in the sense that it hides user. And again, it's to use of the word transparent that is a little bit weird, but that's how it is in the literature. So the specific issues that groupware has to deal with are things like view congruence, feed through, which is the mechanism by which you can do awareness. So you remember feedback, the system telling me what I'm doing. You remember feed forward, the system telling me what I can do now. Feed through is a system telling others what I am doing. There's also issues that are linked to this notion of session. When someone enters a session after the rest of the group, we call that a latecomer. We need to get that latecomer up to speed with what's going on. And it's not just making it with consistent state, although this is what current software does, but usually the latecomer would like to know, okay, what happened since I was last here? And we get into this whole historical thing of how to tell the user, well, since the last time you saw this document, this and this and that has happened.
So I will focus on
before I get there, one more thing. So you remember this diagram of an interactive system where a user is issuing commands, providing feedback. These commands get turned into operations that affect a set of shared objects, and the results of these operations are turned into responses that the user can perceive, and so he knows that this command has been executed. Now, what we do here is essentially we're sharing objects. So these shared objects, I thought I had another part of this drawing, where I have this same thing sort of on the other side where other users can access the same objects. Now, how do you do that? Well, there's a simple way where I put these objects on the on the central server, and the operations access those objects like they would do with the database. It's simple, but it has a low response time because you have to go to the server every time. It's also brittle. If the server crashes in particular, you're dead. And so usually we try to avoid a centralized solution. So we go for a replicated solution where you can have good response time because essentially you're going to copy those objects on each user's computer. You can have good notification time, at least not slower than the centralized thing, because in fact, in a replicated architecture, each site tends to connect directly to all the other sites, whereas in a centralized one, it's always through the central server. So in terms of network hops, you have one hop in a replicated architecture, whereas you have two in the centralized one, so that can help with notification time. But it's a lot more complex to implement. I don't know how many of you have had a class in distributed systems. Yeah? Okay. You know what I mean. Now, some systems are built on a hybrid model where it's mostly replicated and there are some centralized functions. And, you know, other cloud-based systems tend to be on this model because they centralize things on the cloud, including hosting your documents. But the Google Doc, I think, I actually don't know how it works, but certainly could work in a replicated way for the editing itself, and only the saving would be done centrally.
Oh, more text. That was not meant to be here.
So, at this point I'm not sure what to do, because I have a section on how you manage this consistency maintenance, but it's going to take us a lot of time, so maybe I'll save that for next class, and hopefully after Christmas and New Year's we'll be full of energy, and you'll need it because this is a little bit technical, but just, you know, to put that into your brain and so we can pick up from there next time. In a replicated architecture, we have distributed sites. I have copies of the objects at all sites. The problem is, how do I make it so that when I make a change on my machine, and I do it right now, so I can see it immediately, I can distribute this change to the other ones, which are doing their own thing. So, say, Carla, now, I don't know why I'm, you know, but, so if you type an A and I type a B, and we do this almost the same time, my software is going to see insert B, it's going to do this, and send it to you. Yours is going to do insert A, send it to me. I will receive your insert A after I've inserted my B, and you will receive my insert B after you inserted your A. So I have two documents. One will receive the operations insert A, then insert B. The other one will receive first insert B, then insert A. I want to make sure that we end up with the same document. So that's the key of consistency maintenance. And so we call these things that are sent between the various things events. So each site sends it into the other site, and each site must execute them in the order they arrive, in such a way that the result is consistent. And essentially, we will concentrate on optimistic algorithms because we don't like pessimistic algorithms. We are not pessimistic kind of guys. Pessimistic algorithms say, oh, shit is going to happen. So this is the distributed database. So we lock everything, we transaction, you know, then we do the change when we unlock, and then, you know, we can continue. This works. It's not that easy to do well, by the way. It works, but it will slow down operations. And we want real-time stuff. It also assumes that, by default, problems will happen. That's why they're called pessimistic. In optimistic algorithm, we say, you know, these people, they work together, they know what they're doing, so by and large, they will not get into conflicting situations. So let's assume things will go well. Let's make sure that if something goes wrong, we'll notice it, and we're able to fix it. So optimistic algorithms will try to make as if everything is fine, but we'll be able to handle cases where things are not fine. And we'll see two approaches: operational transformations, that's where you need all your brain, and optimizing the redo, which is a little bit easier. Okay? Questions about this? No. I want to show one last thing. If by chance you want to put your hands on a keyboard during Christmas, you never know. Here's two things that I would recommend you look at. And I'll put the links. So, if you want to build communication systems,
there is a thing that is quite widely used that is called Node. I know you know because you used it, no? For your
it's Node.js, right?
Yes, Node.js.
I didn't use Node.js.
Oh, you didn't? I thought you said you did. Okay. Anyway, Node.js, it's a system that allows you to program in JavaScript even though it's not JavaScript in the browser. So here is a very simple chat system written in Node.js. So the whole program is here. I will put the link to it. But that's a chat system written in Node. And essentially what it does is, it's not a very fancy interface. It's through Telnet. So I Telnet to this server here. It tells me, welcome, enter your username. I'm going to say Alice. Then I have another one, but that could be, of course, on a different computer. My name is Bob. As I type Bob, it says Bob has joined. I'm going to say hello here. It says Bob says hello. Here, Alice is French, so she says salut. Here it says salut. And I can do things like, I thought there were commands. Users? Anyway, so there are some magic words to do other things. So what's nice with Node is that what I'm doing here in this terminal screen can be done from a web page, so it's a lot cooler looking, and you can do more than just text. And so if you look for Node.js chat, you'll find a number of examples, and I'll put links, of the same thing but happening in the web window. And since you're programming JavaScript on the server side and on the client side, you don't have to twist your brains between seven different languages. Now, while you're immersing yourself in JavaScript, if you want to do concurrent editing, I would recommend Share.js, which implements this distributed algorithm I talked about for arbitrary objects, which are JSON objects for those who know what JSON is. So it allows you to have a set of objects that are shared among multiple browser windows on different computers and does all the heavy lifting of maintaining them in sync when one site makes a change. So if you go to sharejs.org, which is their home site, you see this little very simple example here, which is also a kind of chat thing, where I have these two windows, and whatever I type here is reflected on the other thing. And so we're doing shared editing of this text, and the code is here, which is a good three lines. So if you want to play with that, I think it will be useful when we try to build a little something in the second part of the course. Okay, so keep an eye on the page for the course. I will add stuff to it, and including links to these things and to papers and the videos I showed. Okay?